Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. For over two decades, I've had the pleasure of interviewing world-renowned experts on food and nutrition, from gluten-free, paleo, vegan, keto, to followers of the Mediterranean diet. The opinions are as different as night and day. This was the reason I wrote my book, Food Sanity, to break through all the food facts, fads, and fiction. My guest today is on the same mission of putting an end to the culinary conundrum. Joining us is Dr. P.K. Newby, author of Food and Nutrition, What Everyone Needs to Know. Her book answers 134 standalone questions on addressing important topics on how what we eat affects our health and environment. Don't go anywhere. It all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest has over 25 years' experience researching diet-related diseases and teaching why what we eat matters from farm to fork. She's a best-selling author, scientist, gastronome, and sought-after international speaker. She was voted one of the best undiscovered cooks on ABC's TV show The Taste. She holds a doctorate from Harvard, two master's degrees from Columbia, and served on the faculties at Tufts University and Boston University. She's currently an adjunct associate professor and award-winning educator at Harvard and dedicates most of her time to fighting anti-science. Her latest book is called Food and Nutrition, What Everyone Needs to Know. Welcome to the show, Dr. P.K. Newby.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me on. It's such a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, it's so great. I've been looking forward to this interview. You know, as a kid, I loved reading the Tell Me Why series of books. I mean, they offered simple, easy to read and understandable answers that all of us kids had. You know, why is the sky blue? What happened to
Right.
I remember that. What happened to the dinosaurs? And, you know, your food and nutrition book is a wonderful Tell Me Why book for adults. Share what inspired you to write in this unique format.
Well, you know, one of my colleagues actually had written for Oxford University Press, and when I saw his book, it's this Q&A format, and I absolutely loved it for the reasons that you identified. It's easy, it's digestible, it's quick, and obviously it's science-based. It's with the Oxford University Press, so they have this great series called What Everyone Needs to Know, and I just think it's terrific. So my goal was really to cut through all the junk science, as you were just alluding to, and give people the science-based answers to the questions that they have when they're going to the grocery store and when they're making dinner.
Yeah, like I said, it's very good references. They can easily read. You don't have to sit down and read a chapter to learn about a topic. It's, hey, you give it a couple minutes and you've got the topic. I love that. You put the best in a nice, concise manner. Let me ask you, what do you feel is the major food and nutritional challenge impacting, you know, human environmental health from all your research? What's the biggest challenge?
Well, I guess the biggest challenge is depending on where you are. You know, but when you think from a global perspective, one of the biggest challenges by far is creating and having a sustainable food system such that we can feed, you know, just 10 billion people, you know, 10 billion people in 2050. That's the big question that a lot of people are thinking about. How do you do that sustainably that preserves the Earth's resources and also that keeps people healthy? And that's something that the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations and many others have been thinking about for quite some time. That's one of the big ones. But of course, you have challenges like malnutrition and hunger that still impact so many people around the world. We have issues like obesity and chronic diseases. So there's no shortage of food and nutrition challenges, for sure.
That's true. And again, you know, food is the answer. I believe that, you know, most disease would be gone if we ate healthy and clean. And so do experts I've interviewed, and I've read an interesting article showing that 80% of the hospital beds would be empty if people ate healthy.
The World Health Organization, you know, part of what I have in almost every love rate, 80%, the way I use 80% is, and it's probably stems from the same place, the World Health Organization, you know, based on the science, says that 80% of chronic diseases like type 2 diabetes, heart disease, stroke, can be prevented through lifestyle changes. And diet is the single most modifiable factor.
Right.
So that's what the science is. It's just like what you're saying. I mean, that's so much power. There's so many things we can't control in our lives, but we really can, within our genetic constraints, of course, consume diet in a way that's really going to help us live longer and better.
Yeah, that's true. I know there's so many books out there that have an agenda, and I've read where the author cherry picks research to prove their views. Your book does a great job of sharing really an unbiased look at all aspects of diet and nutrition. I'm curious, what question do you answer in your book that brings the most aha moments to readers? The one that gets the response, I didn't know that.
Well, you know what? I think, I'm going to have to think, but I'm going to talk while I'm thinking. What I will tell you is that the more general concept, I don't know about the one question, but when I've been going around the country and, you know, internationally giving talks on the book, the biggest surprises are just how inefficient it is to create a pound of meat, basically. So you're talking about 13 pounds of grain versus for beef versus 6 for pork versus 3 for chicken, not to mention a huge amount of water cost. And we know from reports from the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations that livestock is responsible for a huge impact of greenhouse gas emissions and the like. And when I show data from that, which obviously, you know, I'm a scientist, I'm data driven. When I show data and images of deforestation, of factory farming, those are aha moments for people. So
yeah,
people are getting a little bit more attuned to how our food choices impact the environment, especially now with, you know, increased attention to climate change. But those are the big aha moments. And as you know, from looking at my book, that's a big part of the messages too. So my mantra is from farm to fork, what we eat matters, right? And people kind of always think about their own health, and that makes sense, right? Got to put on your own mask before you take care of others. But food choices matter beyond our own body.
Yeah,
really,
I know.
Really lay out how that, those impacts, it matters to people. It's aha.
Yeah, I know. When I was writing my book, my big aha was when I researched the caveman diet to see what they ate. And I know in your book, you share how a caveman ancestor's diet, just like I found, is primarily plant-based, which goes against that popular paleo diet advocates. So I love what you said in your book. You said this in your book. Rather than call them hunter and gatherers, you switched it to refer them as gatherers and hunters. Tell us why.
Well, actually, gatherer scavengers, but gatherer hunters, if you like. But that's later, because we weren't able to you know, hunt animals and the like until we had made tools. So that's many millions of years into the Paleolithic era. So there's a couple of ahas there. One is, as you said, the earliest eaters were absolutely plant-based because that's what all they could do. They didn't really have the tools. The earliest animals we ate were likely we scavenged on the ground. They were dead. So that was, we're gather scavengers. But yeah, we later started hunting, but you could only do that to a lesser degree. So that is an aha part about the paleo diet. And I want to add in, if you'll allow me, that there's not just one paleo diet. Because think about it, at that point, we're already sort of getting scattered around the world. So your diet depended on where you were, whether you were close to the shoreline and seafood, or whether you were in the mountains or whatever it is. So there's really not even one paleo diet, but certainly originally they were plant-based.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, even if you ignore science, it also look at common sense. Rather than risk their lives by hunting a deadly lion or mammoth, they probably chose to safely pick fruits, vegetables, and grains when they were available, and then go, oops, nothing available.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to go after that lion now. Oh no, wish me luck.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad you brought up that point, because it is really fascinating. You're right. That's such a good one. That's such a fascinating one that so many people get wrong. You know, the paleo diet, as if there was only one, as if it was meat, as if it included, you know, all those people, the paleo people drinking, like, guess what, people? Alcohol wasn't a part of it either, nor was coffee.
Exactly.
We have some good things that I'm not going to be giving up anytime soon.
That's so true. You know, I've also shared my views on the show about a topic I was happy to see you delve into in your book, the anti-grain movement. Everybody's so afraid of gluten-containing grains, yet research has proven them for millions of years, and they've become the redheaded stepchild of food. Share your views on grains.
Whole grains have shown to be related and part of a healthy diet, a heart-healthy diet, part of a plant-based diet, and they give so many nutrients and fiber and vitamins and minerals. If they're whole, you know, once they're refrained, you sort of strip them of a lot of their nutrition. But gluten is just a protein, you know, as you know, David. And so, as I was saying the other day in an interview, how we wish gluten would go away, right? It's such an oddity that people are sort of obsessed with. And what happens, research has shown, is when people take away grains, just like you take away a food group, you're left with creating a diet with a more limited range of foods, and your diets tend to be less healthier, right? So we have a lot of research showing that. So, you know, if you're going to, if people are going to cut out grains because they have to, you've got to be pay more attention to getting those nutrients from elsewhere. But as for me, you know, I'm not giving up my French baguette anytime soon. Or, but, you know, or whole wheat pasta. They're really good sources of nutrition.
That's true.
So it's a shame, you know.
And there are people that have a harder time digesting it. But, you know, I don't blame the grains or the gluten. I blame our microbiomes. I think we've developed this inability to digest it. But, you know, our great-grandparents didn't have that issue. Why do we? We can't blame genetics. Something's causing it. I don't blame grains. I think they're getting the wrong grain. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've talked about FODMAPs on earlier shows, so I'll leave that word out there. I don't want to digress into it. If you're for your listeners, you can find an expert to talk about it, but it's really, basically, it's a really a fascinating area of research, and it's a bunch of different elements that hang out with gluten. So we're still unraveling why we've seen a true increase in celiac disease and in gluten-related disorders. Those increases are real, but wow. Everyone jumping on the bandwagon unnecessarily, kind of looking to the wrong place, and that brings us back to junk science, right? Celebrities like Gwyneth Paltrow and other people have really made it harder for people to learn the truth about food, whether it's about gluten or the paleo diet, because of people who are, you know, went to their autopsies or celebrities or, you know, whatnot. A whole range of examples there.
So true. I know you've studied, you have a hobby of really studying cultures around the world and research their diets. Is there a specific type of food or ingredient you found that is eaten commonly among the healthiest people on the planet? Is there one defining, you know, item or ingredient?
One defining food itself. Not that I know of. You know, so what a great question. Because when I think about it, I go back to it's more what is the defining theme, and the defining theme is plant-based. Because mm-hmm. if you look at the longest-lived populations in the world, so obviously you have your Mediterranean diet. It's just one example, right? And then you have your red wine, your fruits, your vegetables. Sometimes you have your little small amount of cheese, nuts, that kind of thing. But then on the other side of the world, in Okinawa, where you have the longest-lived women, you have a diet that looks completely different. And instead of wheat being the main grain, you have rice, and then you have sweet potatoes and some fish, and you have a beautiful millet brandy they make sometimes, traditional Japanese women. So you have green tea, soy, all of those things. And if you pop back over to the Nicoyans, you know, in Costa Rica, you end up seeing a totally different diet that's more Central American, rice, beans, and all of that jazz. You know, so you have differences in grains that are because that's what's available from the environment and the culture, right? You have differences in fruits and vegetables because that's what's available in the environment. So from the very beginning, going back to paleo again, we've been crafting a diet based upon what was available in the environment. And it's only in recent years where we've started creating, right, with the built world where we have this whole thing of a supermarket. We can get anything anytime. But that wasn't the case for the vast majority of human history. So I just think plant-based is the key, and how people craft that is very much related to their tradition, culture, and palate.
So true, yeah, and it's definitely, and there are some cultures do more beans, but grains, but yeah, it's definitely just down to earth. It's staying away from these processed foods, you know. What's the famous, if it comes from a plant, stay away, but if it's made from a plant, eat it? I mean, I love that line.
Plant-based is just, it really is the link between all these diets. And of course, as you well know, David, I mean, maintaining a proper weight, you know, you no matter what you're eating, and you could potentially eat, you know, too many salads, you know, it comes down to that caloric balance. So having a healthy weight, maybe eating a little bit less certainly than most people are used to, those things that are really the key to longevity.
Yeah, I know with weight, we're in that time of year where everybody's focused on their weight, but, you know, we have more diets available than ever in history, gyms opening up on every corner, health food stores, hundreds of diet plans, but obesity in America continues to rise. What do you feel is one of the major contributing factors? Have you found that, you know, is it environmental? Do you think it's lack of exercise, all the above, lack of sleep? What's your go-to?
You have such great questions. What a pleasure talking to you.
I'm making you think.
I like that. It's always good to have different questions for that, exactly that reason. Well, you know, I'm a nutrition scientist by training, so clearly, so not only am I biased, not in a biased way with a capital B, but that's my, you know, that's what I do. But aside from that, we sort of know there's been a lot of research to show that obviously exercise is important. In helping to maintain weight, but it's been, and in terms of weight gain as well. and weight loss, but really diet is the major factor. Many, many scientists agree. I think that's just sort of at a very basic level I always try to tell people, because whatever, if you're going to eat a piece of cake, use an extreme example, that think about the amount of calories that kind of increases versus when you say, go to the gym and think about all the time you need to wait to spend working that off. It's a crude example, but it's a good one that makes the point that it's really best to just, you know, cut back on your calories. It's easiest and most efficient. But there's no question things like physical activity and the food environment contribute. But, you know, people, I think, portion size, sugar, all of those things. Sugar, not necessarily because it's so evil and such a villain, but more because it's, you know, it hangs out with all of these high-calorie foods. So I think certainly portion size has a huge plays a huge role in the obesity epidemic. I think there's no question about that.
Right. I know your diet's not easy to figure out. You share nutritional benefits of eating plants, and you also talk about important, you know, some nutrition benefits of animals. And then I read you're a plant-based cook, yet I saw a video of you at a restaurant eating a grilled cricket. What type of diet do you follow?
That's funny. I have a plant-based diet, and you know, my tagline is healthy hedonism, but it's plant-based, globally inspired. You know, plant-based, globally inspired. I've traveled around the world, so I get a lot of input from travel. But I'm largely a vegetarian, and I love creating beautiful plant-based dishes that help to show people that if you think vegetarian food is boring, you just haven't had it cooked well. You know, and especially now with all the incredible plant-based alternatives, Beyond Meat and the like, which will satisfy even omnivores, carnivores. It's really an exciting time to be eating plant-based. The crickets thing, though, and it's a good place to put up, I mean, to discuss, David, that, you know, millions of people around the world eat insects. So that's what I was kind of trying to demonstrate. I think what happens sometimes, a lot of people, a lot of authors, a lot of scientists in the U.S., is that people get caught up in sort of a place of privilege, you know, a place of privilege. We're here and we can create whatever diet we want. But that's part of what I do in the first part of my book as well, which is I try to increase the literacy and increase the appreciation for the fact that, you know, we have more than 7 billion people on the world, and millions of them eat insects, and millions of them actually do have meat as part of a diet because they, you know, they are subsistence agricultural workers, and that's their reality. So I try to, that's why I cover everything in the book, because, you know, I'm privileged because I can create a diet myself because I don't need to raise a cow to feed myself and my family. And no one kind of thinks about that, you know?
Oh, yeah. And it's becoming a sustainable. It's very sustainable. There's a lot of cricket powder on the market, people mixing with their shakes. And I mean, it's cricket candy bars that are healthy and organic.
It's a much more sustainable form of protein. It's a much more sustainable form of protein. And, I was so fascinated to see it on the table at a restaurant in New York City, and I try to be, you know, I'm the aunt that, you know, exposes my nieces and nephews to all kinds of different things, and so that is why we ordered them. It wasn't necessarily my cup of tea, you know, per se, but I was just so fascinated that they're there.
I'm with you. I would try it. I mean, you know, how can you say, ooh, you don't like it? It's like, you never tried it. You know, it's like, you know, so many people hate things that they never, I had someone that says, there was somebody that said, do you eat kale? I hate it. I go, have you ever tried it? She goes, no. I go, how do you know people here? It just sounds like I wouldn't like it.
Also, let me tell you, I have turned more people onto Brussels sprouts than you can imagine, because you just roast them. You know, you roast them and it's at a high heat. They're beautiful and crispy. All you need is a little olive oil, vinegar, salt, and pepper. And, you know, that's the key to so many vegetables just tasting really good. And so many people have gotten turned on to Brussels sprouts. A little bit harder with kale, but actually you can do kale chips that way too. So, you know, cooking plant-based foods is definitely the cornerstone of my repertoire.
Fantastic. I know in the minute or two we have left, what else would you like to share from your new book, Food and Nutrition? Why should everybody listening get a copy? You know, what's another food myth that maybe you can break and show the value?
Okay, let's see. Food myths. There are too many to go through here, but I thank you for the opportunity. You know, the coconut oil is still a big one, the health food that sort of never was. Not that there's anything wrong with it when it's part of traditional diet. But I think that you know, we already talked about gluten a little bit, paleo. I think, you know, I go through a whole bunch of popular ones so that whatever questions your reader have, gosh, I sure hope it's in my book. Because the subtitle, as you mentioned, at What Everyone Needs to Know, yeah, it should be in there because it tries to increase food literacy and appreciation for the challenges the world has, but it also speaks to the eaters right here, you know, in our country who are trying to decide how to eat best for themselves, for the family, for their own health and longevity, and probably for the planet too. And I think I'd leave by saying, you know, I'd leave it by saying the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. You know, you asked me kind of what are the key foods, the key nutrients, and I feel like, you know, the bottom line is the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. It's how you put together a healthy and sustainable plant-based diet that's going to be best for you and the planet. Focus on plant-based. But by all means, make it delicious.
Yes.
Make it delicious.
Definitely. And
life,
you know,
is short. Food is meant to be enjoyed and celebrated,
it's true.
Right?
And good
not
food
just
can
medicine.
Be delicious.
You know?
Yeah. Fantastic.
Medicine, but not just medicine.
So true. Well, fantastic. Like I said, it's a great, power-packed, informative book. I hope everybody gets a copy. I have mine here. And I want to thank you so much for being here today and helping us sort through the nutrition and culinary conundrum. There's so much confusion out there. You do a great job of concisely answering so many of the questions. And not just adults. I bet even some Tell Me Why kids would still want to know some things in here. So even your kids want to know this. So if you Tell Me Why kids, grab this book. And to get your copy of PK's book, Food and Nutrition, What Everyone Needs to Know, you can go to pknewby.com. And while there, be sure and check out her healthy recipes, blog articles, and media library of healthful information. You can follow PK on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at pknewby. For my daily post, follow me on Facebook and Twitter at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Dr. D. Friedman. And if you heard PK share something today that somebody you know needs to hear, send them a link to this podcast. It's available at toyourgoodhealthradio.com and radiomd.com, and peruse our podcast library, share segments with friends, family, coworkers, and on social media. This information is too important to keep to yourself. You can subscribe to future podcasts on iHeartRadio and iTunes. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.